session number 17987, reel 2.
Roy Vincent, reel 2.
Like I said, the IPP tent, and it was all taken in good fun with lots of laughter and giggling because the tent poles would sink in and pegs would pull out, but we eventually got some sort of shelter. And then came the time for the searches, and we found a silver mine, and we had a chap called Shawcross, who was a corporal, and I was in this section, and he used to have what he called his clicky bar. Was a comic character in the Wizard or Hotspur, I think it was, the Wolf of Kabul, and he used to have a chung, his servant. You had a battered old cricket bat studded with nails and stuff like that. And we went in these mines, the tunnels, and we were out wasting water. It was black as the ace of spades, couldn't see a thing. And we had hurricane lamp up front, hurricane lamp at the back kind of thing. And consequently nothing between but blackness. And you didn't know what was in these water, snakes could be anything. And bats around your hair, you know, around your ears. And we bent, slow stooped, you know, walking through the rock. And he used to be saying, I'm chung, I've got my clicky bar, and we've walked all through. But we looked through there, didn't find anything, we just got soaking wet mainly, different places.
You're supposed to be looking for pirates?
Pirates and gun runners, you know, any gun catches, one like that. And then they decided to send two patrols, under Lieutenant Boswell, Sandy Boswell, and Lieutenant Jock Eddington. And we went round the island in a police boat, then landed on the beach, on the jetty, and then up, started climbing the hill, a big mountain there. And the idea was to go up to the top and look around and see what it was, you know, like that. But as we got up there, hard work in the sun and with a full kit, you know, got up there, not full kit, battle order, you know, rifles and stuff. And we got up there, came to a monastery, big monastery. And we stood out, we got outside, we rested outside, and old Sandy Boswell said to me, "You used to be a cook, Vincent, didn't you?" I said, "I've done a little bit, you know." And he said, "Well, can you make a brew of tea?" So the monks were all, you know, fussing around. They didn't know what was happening. And I made them understand I'd like a big Dixie to brew some tea. You know, I don't know how I did it, but they took me behind this big gold-covered butter and I lit a fire and I boiled this big rice bowl thing, brass rice bowl. Boiled it up. Made a big can of tea, handfuls of tea in there, and bags of sugar, condensed milk, you know. Made a typical Sergeant Major's brew. Anyway, I took it out, lads, and they had it with their rations, or some of the rations they were. And then, when anybody had had it, or everybody had had enough, I gave the rest of the monks. And you'd have thought I was giving them Christmas presents or something. They'd never seen tea like it, you know. And they took it in with a great deal of. Mind you, I had to scour that pan out pretty well because there's rice sticking to it and God knows what, you know. But anyway, after that, what they decided to do was to circle the mountain where they were with one patrol and the other one to go up right over the top and down the other side into the base. And he said to one chap who was from the islands, I forget his name now, oh, Sandy Boswell, he said, "You stay behind because we'll take small packs off the lads, which is go up in skeleton order with rifles and that. And you stay with the kit till we come back." And I don't know if he's superstitious or what, but this fella says, "I'm not staying here with these savages," or words to that effect. And Vincent, being a cunning devil and thinking of that climb, and thinking of, "I can sit around here till they come back," I said, "I'll stay behind, you know." Well, with that, they did. And they left. And I'm sitting there with 11 rounds of my rifle across my knees. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I didn't know it was around there. There was houses around there, wasn't there? Or what they were like. They could have been the gun runners for a while, you know. But eventually, the mist came down the mountain top. I thought, that's handy, if they're going to come back at night. And then the monks gave me to understand they were closing the gate for the night. And did I want to come in or did I want to stay out? So I thought, well, I better be inside. You know, I went inside. And they closed the gates. And they gave me my rough old camp bed. So I put all the stuff underneath, all the packs underneath the bed. And I sat there all night with a rifle across my knee because the monks started chanting and wailing, going round in circles, and that went all night. And I figured it was me for the job, you know. And I thought, well, I'm going to be expensive to go, you know. But that, I just sat there and watched them, very, very weary. You know, nothing like it in my life. But next morning, daylight came and everything was opened up. And I still didn't know what to do. While I'd been sat outside the doings, I didn't know where to fire the rifle to guide them in the mist. And if I did, I thought, well, it might panic them and somebody might get hurt. So I just sat there and thought, well, that's the best thing to do. And then I saw Major Marsden way downhill coming up with a police inspector and Major Marsden's batman. I saw the three figures and eventually that's who the killer and that'd be. And Major Marsden just looked at me and said, oh, you're here. And I thought, well, where the hell else am I going to be? And with that, he turned around and started walking down again. So we picked up the kit, the chap and myself, and we followed him, dragging all his kit. You know, I thought he could have given us a hand with a couple of cases, you know, but he didn't. And we went down, and the police launch was there, and I hadn't anything to eat. I didn't eat anything, the biscuits or anything, the stuff we'd got, because I realised the lads coming round would be even hungrier. You know? So one of the ship's cooks, said, do you want anything to eat? I said, well, I haven't had anything. So he said, no, you know. He gave me two little tiny pulley tags, I think it was, and a sweet potato. Well, sweet potato went over the side. I couldn't stand them. And I ate the two pulley tags. It appeared that Sandy Boswell had supposed to be missing. Anyway, that was the Lantau episode over. We got back to the beach. We used to have some fun. I used to be good swimming. There was a float out in a bay and a juncture to go into the bay, small bay, and defecating it over the sides of the lads used to get a bit slightly annoyed with that. Used to swim out, some of the strong swimmers, and rock the things that got out of the way, the sampans and stuff, you know. But we used to have one fella called Geordie. What's his name now? Oh, big Geordie. He was the Far East long distance champion eventually. He was a big, powerful bloke. And he was like a clumsy camel on land, but in the water, he was like a fish. He tried to teach me to swim. In the end, he gave it up as a bad job. I can swim underwater, I can float, but I can't swim on top. But we had some fun. That's about the only thing to do when you got there. And then after that, we got back to Stanley and they said, right, you're going up in the territories. My Chick Cochran, I told you about, and two or three others, we're going up to form the Mortar Platoon's third section. And we didn't like it at all because all our mates were in the company. But anyway, we went up to the territories, way beyond anywhere, because the support company was on detachment at Lo Wu, right on the border of the bridge to China. And we reported. Lieutenant Lager was his name, H. Lyman, seconded to the Argyles. And he was a spot on instructor. Our instructor was a Sergeant Lockridge, and I don't think anybody liked him from day one. He had that kind of attitude about him. And the corporal, the 2IC instructor, was a Corporal Patterson. And it's pretty hard to train, there's motor numbers. And carried on. The other fellas, you know, we didn't get much on with the other fellas because we were busy learning all the time, you know, busy working, you know. Eventually we became motor numbers. And was it? Chick and I were made Section 2 ICs when they reorganised the motors. PM Lag went back to the HLI and we got Captain Ferry, or Lieutenant Ferry as he was in, who was a brigade heavyweight champion boxer. And we eventually were a pretty good motor team. Motor platoon as a whole, we used to do demonstrations. When we got back from Korea, we used to go down to the battle school and used to bring French from China, Indochina, and that to see mortars being fired, probably, you know. But we got different places. We moved down from Louisville to near the gates of the place, the road, I forget what it was called, Dill's Corner, I think it was, which was the corner of the road with the main road. And there, it's funny, but like I said, the British people weren't looked on very nicely by troops. We were just an inconvenience for them, you know. I mean, the first people to acknowledge the arrival of the Argylls and Middlesex, come to that, were Chinese businessmen. They organised beach parties, barbecues, things like that, anything to break the monotony. And if you wanted a lift, prior to the trucks leaving the camp, which they're riding the back of a three-tonner all the way down from the borders to Hong Kong, isn't it conducive to enjoying yourself? And if you wanted a lift, you went down to the end of the road and you flagged down cars. The British cars would bowl past you like you weren't even there. The Chinaman would stop. I once got a ride in a Chinese chap driving a Rolls Royce. And I thought, well, if he can do that, why the hell can't a British do that? Well, but
this is about 1949, is it?
No, 49, yeah. But, and I'd heard stories, because when we went out, when we got to Singapore, when we went out there, we had two or three men from the old 2nd Battalion, being prisoners with the chaps and that, and they were taken to see the old, you know, battle play of the money, because we had stopped there for boilers again, you know, with the day there. And they used to tell the stories about British and that. I used to think, can't be that bad, you know. But when I've read about it since, about not being allowed to cut down the road trees to get a field of fire and all this kind of thing, and you can't do that because it belongs to somebody, it's stupidity to be on belief, you know. You can't understand them. But anyway, get back to Hong Kong. We eventually heard about this Korean thing brewing up, and it's funny, but we'd had a couple of tries packing up for a rapid move, and it started to accumulate. We were going to Korea. There's no argument, we were going to Korea. And just a rumour between the lads themselves, you know. And we didn't know where Korea was, you know. But we figured we'd go for there. And sure enough, we came with the Argylls and Middlesex that were going to Korea. I don't know whether you know it, but the first troops to land in the 1418 war were the Argylls at Middlesex, and the old Contemptibles, and the first troops went to land in the 1940 was the Argylls at Middlesex on Europe, and we were the first in Korea. I don't know whether they got two lists of names of regiments, the Argylls topping one part and Middlesex the other half, you know. And they just take the top two every time, you know. But it seems to be it. But the Argylls and Middlesex have always been together, it appears. But getting back to that, we started packing, and we packed all our gear, everything we got. And we eventually arrived at the dockside, and there was HMS Ceylon waiting for us. And further down was the bulwark, I think it was, for the Middlesex. But we got on great with the sailors. We all packed in. The first meal we had, the sailors were, you know, because we had to share a mess with different people. And we were in a stoker's mess. And they went to draw the rations, brought them back. And they were moaning and groaning. We looked at it. It would look like a mess feast to us, you know, great stuff. So we said, what the hell are you going to complain about? And he said, well, he said, look what we've got in. I said, you ought to be with us. I said, have you ever heard of pom mashed potatoes? He said, well, what is it? I said, it looks like putty. It's supposed to be dried potatoes. I said, it tastes like putty. I said, we get meat, which is, I'm damn sure, is old water buffalo, because you chew it like crepe rubber. You can keep chew it for hours, you know. And I told him about the tomato soup, which we occasionally treated with, which was a bottle of tomato sauce poured into a gallon of water or something, you know. But then I said, that's the kind of food you want. I said, then you won't complain about this. But we enjoyed the food there, you know. And we had to curlow in different places to get sleep and get somewhere to sleep. And I tried it under the 4.7s. High angles, and but they started mucking about over me, and I thought, I'm mucking about it, must stay near. And I went down to some place near the engine room, I don't know where it was, but slightly warm, beautifully warm bulkhead. I thought, this will do me. And I had to leave my blanket, one of my blankets there eventually, because it stuck to the wall. Couldn't get it free. And we go up to Formosa, and everybody stood too, because they didn't know how the Chinese were going to react. And we had two Australian destroyers join us, the Warramunga and Bataan. I always remember those names. One of them came in that fast. You know, we thought, bloody hell, he's going to hit us. But he just came up alongside, you know, with a big curve. It was really neat work, you know, to get his orders or whatever it was he wanted. But they did escort through the Moses Strait. And the ship's captain, so on, I don't know whether he did it on purpose or what, but he won over the Argyles, no bother. Because on top of it, you know, put up the ensign at the top of the foremast when we left Hong Kong. And underneath, he put the regimental flag. So we were passed from there on. It's really clear, but Middlesex didn't get on with the bulwark, or the unicorn, I think it was a unicorn, I'm not sure. They didn't seem to get on with them as well. And we used to have some great times in Hong Kong after when they got back. But landed at Pusan, and we're standing there on the dockside waiting to see what was going on. And we had to get brought up. Oh, but prior to that, on the ship's MO went out, Dr. Haldane, were giving some jabs, and he went down the aisle of this ship with your hands on your hips like some big fairy, you know, and they both hit you one in each arm, you know. And it was queer blazes, but anyway, we got on the ship and on the key rider, and the American nurses were there, medical teams, and there are lots of nurses there. And I got in a queue for get my job, I wanted my share of prevention, whatever it was, you know. And I watched the nurse, and she hit this bloke just about 67 times with a needle for his vaccination. I thought, bloody hell, doesn't she like men or what? So I moved queues. I wasn't going to have 67 jabs at my arm from her, you know, wherever she was. But then as an American came up to me, and he said, who are you? I said, we're the British. He said, we've heard the islanders are coming. I said, well, that's us. And he shook me like an idiot, you know. He said, thank God. He said, the army of ours is no bloody good. He said, we'll have somebody to help us, you know. So I thought then, was a setup. So we eventually climbed in the train, and we thought the lads had, the salon had left us, you know, and marched, because they marched up the road with us to the station, whatever it was, and all wooden seats, no windows, no nothing in the train. And then all the sailors disappeared, and the next thing we saw was crates of rations coming through the windows. The Ceylon boys had been there again, and they'd caught up with the ration train, and they were lobbing them through the windows at us, which wasn't bad. Anyway, it's a cold old trip to where we were going. I think it was a place near Waigwan. I think it was Smoy Waigwan or something like that. I think it was called Waigwan. We finished up in the riverbed, and we'd buy, you know, bivouac down there. And big, all sorts of generals came up to see us, you know, American generals. And
is this in the front line?
No, it's on the way to the front line. And big, all these generals came up there with our sidekicks and photographers, of course. And we had some slipper barrels with us, which is a train barrel for a mortar. And when you're doing drill non-firing, you use a slipper barrel, because the bomb just slips right at the bottom. It's a dummy bomb, slips right at the bottom. You know a mortar barrel? It's like a tube. Well, if you take a piece out and put a chute there, that's your slipper barrel. The bomb just goes straight down, you know. But you get the same effect as if you were firing. But anyway, all these Americans and Jews looking at the training and all getting up to scratch. And we were saying to the lads, show them what you can do, you know, don't muck about. And they didn't muck about. And I had two Americans saying, these boys are good. So we, that's all it has. It wasn't bad. So eventually we went up to Nacton, and it's pouring rain, pitch black. And we were going to relieve the 1st Cavalry Division, or part of the 1st Cavalry Division. And we're climbing these hills through these trees, single file, and coming down the other way was the Americans. Everybody soaking wet. And this American, he had a 30 caliber machine gun on his shoulder, something like a brain gun. And as he went past me, he just tipped it down the hill and swore it, and said, to hell with him, buddy, you know, well, where's that effect? And he just tipped his machine gun down the hill. I thought, what kind of an army are they? You know. Anyway, we kept on and got up there, and it was on the side of a hill, and a slight plateau, but the hill was all round, you know, kind of thing. And we got settled there best we could in this rain, tried to make bivouacs. Well, all we had at that time was our ground sheets, you know, the big ground sheets, poncho things. And you make try and make some tents that way. And it rained and rained for 3 or 4 days. We dug the mortar pits, you know, to set the mortars in. And the first action we had with the mortars, and we lined them on targets in the, across the river. But the first action we did, we got to know that they'd infiltrated around the back of us. So the first movement we got was a 180 degree shift, firing back where we come from, as it were. But an A company, I think it was A company, one of the companies, and just let them drift through and then waited for them to come back, and really had a good job with them, you know, really cut them down. And we got a bit of shell fire, but it was from, I think it was from a SP across the other side, because one side of us was wide open to another. We run like a bend, and while we got the hill going up that way, we were wide open to things from that way. And I had a big driver, Nicholson, a big powerful dog he was, and he made a, because while I'm busy with the section and one thing and different things, I said to him, you dig us a slit there. And he didn't dig a slit there, he just made rocks and that stuck up around the edge, you know. But And we got a bit of stuff in that day. And I said, you dig a right slit. I said, one hole there. I said, you get down. I said, the rocks are no good. He dug a hole, all right, because the next time I jumped down there, I'd disappeared. He could see out of it, but I couldn't. So I had to stand on something to look out of it. And it was really good. And then we were based in position, and I looked around, and mainly Glasgow men in the platoon. And I'm looking around, and I thought, blimey, sweet chestnuts. So we were on pretty poor rations, American rations, 24-hour pack. You could eat them in one meal and still be hungry. But anyway, I looked around, so all these nuts. I said, come on, lads. I said, don't need to go hungry. We've got chestnuts over here. So I'm knocking these chestnuts down, sitting there, and I'm peeling them and eating them. And there's blokes saying, you're going to die, you bloody idiot, you know, kind of thing. They thought they were conkers. So I had to explain to them what the difference was. But they wouldn't believe me. They just sat waiting for it to keel over. I didn't care. I was eating chestnuts.
Were they raw?
Yeah, raw chestnuts, fresh chestnuts out of the tree. You know, it's beautiful. They didn't have the hard skin. You took the husk off, the soft skin, easily peeled off. No muck and bits of dough. It was really enjoyable. But eventually they got the message and they started eating chestnuts. But it was comical to see them watching me, expecting me to roll over and die. And the down below at the bottom of the hill, there's two or three huts, cottages. And we got fed up with being soaking wet and trying to dry ourselves. Everything we had was soaking. I mean, Chick Cochran, he had to dive into his mortar pit to retrieve the site. It was that deep of water, you know. Took the mortar out. Then they had to dive in and find the site, which was a box, you know, a site box. And some of the lads disappeared downhill, and they came back all dressed in women's clothing with dry clobber, you know, something dry on them for a change. So comical, maybe they didn't make a laugh, but they got something dry. But those patrols went out. Lieutenant Younger was I forget his name now. He had about three cousins in. It was a real family regiment. I go, you know. What was his name now?
Might come back to you later.
He might do, yeah. But anyway, he went over with his sergeant and the patrol, find his patrol back, see what was there. And they copped it over there. But another great deal happened. We saw the Mustangs blowing the top of a hill off, you know, and I think it was the Australian Army, Australian Air Force, not sure. But somebody opened up on one of them with a machine gun, and when they're flown over, but one did a perfect loop, came over and blew the top of the hill off with his cannon, you know. So I don't know who it was, but he wish he hadn't opened up that machine gun. But came the next one, we were crossing the river, and it was a rickety bridge, you know, really. It was like